26 at 9:30 a.m. Gather your friends, family, and colleagues and team up for a day by the water supporting Bladder Cancer Canada and register now at bccwalk.ca. Great fun for a great cause. See you on September 13th.
When it comes to Kingston real estate, local experience matters. Kim Purcell is an award-winning realtor born and raised in Kingston with over a decade of experience and 100 five-star reviews. If you want honest advice and results you can trust, choose Kim. Visit kimpurcell.ca today for more information. It's 5 p.m. on a Monday, and you're tuned in to CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from Kingston, Ontario. Coming up next, Today in YGK.
Good evening. It is 5 p.m., and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by your CFRC News Collective, Ara McCauley, Jesse Bell, and Jenny Hinch. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, and for our podcasts, Smith Engineering at Queen's University. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Ara McCauley, and here are your local news headlines. With move-in weekend just around the corner, the City of Kingston is welcoming new and returning post-secondary students to the community and sharing information and advice on parking restrictions, safety initiatives, and their guide to being a good neighbor. According to the City of Kingston, being a good neighbor is a shared responsibility. University students living on or around campus are valued members of the Kingston community. They encourage all new and returning residents to review the City's Good Neighbor Guide for a better understanding of how the City of Kingston operates, the services and opportunities available, and how you can build a foundation of trust and respect in your neighborhoods during the school year and beyond. The guide is available on the City of Kingston's website under their community news or commonly searched bylaws pages. Students and neighbors are reminded that the University District Safety Initiative, UDSI, will be in effect from Friday, August 28th at 12:01 a.m. until Sunday, September 13th at 6 a.m. The purpose of the UDSI is to educate community members and to mitigate risks of large unsanctioned gatherings, including strains on emergency services. During this time, community partners, including city bylaw enforcement officers and Kingston Police, will have an increased presence in the university district. Bylaw enforcement officers can also require people to pay administrative monetary penalties, AMPs, for contraventions of the nuisance party bylaw, the noise bylaw, or other bylaws. As part of UDSI, the city will close Gord Edgar Downey Pier and Breakwater Park Beach to the public nightly from 7 p.m. to 6 p.m., Friday, August 28th to the morning of September 13th. The decision to close the park during this time is to ensure the safety of community members in the university district, as large unsanctioned gatherings in this area pose a major safety risk, particularly at night. Student movement at Queen's begins on the evening of Friday, September 4th and goes until Saturday, September 5th at 5 p.m. To keep traffic moving during student move-in, some area roads will have parking restrictions and some will be designated as one-way traffic. Overnight parking restrictions from 4 p.m. Friday, September 4th through Saturday, September 5th at 5 p.m. include Albert Street between Queen's Crescent to King Street, Stewart Street between University and Albert, Collingwood Street between King Street and Albert Street, Bader Lane, Queen's Crescent, Earl Street between Frontenac Street and Alfred Street, St. Lawrence Avenue East Side, King Street from Lower University Avenue to Beverly Street. Street parking is not permitted Saturday, September 5th between 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Arch at Union Street, George Street at Stewart Street, and Oak Hill Street at George Street. Streets designated one-way for the day September 5th, 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. include Albert Street southbound between Johnson Street and King, Queen's Crescent westbound from Albert to Collingwood Street, Bader Lane westbound, Stewart Street westbound between University Avenue and Albert Street, St. Lawrence Avenue southbound from Stewart Street to King Street, Collingwood Street southbound from Queen's Crescent to King Street, and University Avenue southbound from Earl Street to Stewart Street. A reminder, as students return to campus in the coming days, that the University District Safety Initiative, UDSI, is now in place through September 13th, 2026 at 6 a.m. The University District Safety Initiative exists to encourage safer behavior from students and was formed through a partnership between the City of Kingston, Kingston Police, and Queen's University in 2019. during certain times of the year, such as homecoming and St. Patrick's Day, move-in, and orientation week, the University District Safety Initiative is used. When it is in effect, hosting illegal parties or violating other bylaws can result in action being taken by Queen's under their student code of conduct, and it can also result in an administrative monetary penalty being issued, and in certain cases, a Part 1 court summons requiring those charged to appear before a Justice of the Peace in Kingston. Violators may also be required to pay for the cost of having Kingston police officers and Kingston Fire and Rescue firefighters attend their home, calculated at an approximate rate of $90 for each officer or firefighter for each hour or part of an hour they were there. The UDSI is in place to address violations of the Nuisance Party Bylaw, Liquor License Act, and Noise Bylaw, with penalties for those who host or refuse to leave a party, for using a closed road, blocking officers or other officials, drinking while underage, carrying open alcohol in public spaces, being drunk in public, and making loud noise like shouting, blasting music, or playing musical instruments during restricted hours. While the policy references the University District, the Kingston Police and Bylaw Enforcement can use the initiative citywide. Individuals who receive a Part 1 court summons are required to attend court to either plead guilty and receive a fine, or plead not guilty, in which case a trial will be scheduled. If those charged do not attend court, a trial will be scheduled without further notifications, and if found guilty, the court may recommend the maximum fine. Additionally, if a person receives a Part 1 summons, their name will be placed on a public court record, and this information will be shared with the university to identify Queen's students. The Student Conduct Office will then individually review each student's situation and determine appropriate consequences based on what happened. That wraps up your headlines for this evening. Next up is Jesse Bell with your CFRC Sports Desk.
This is your sports report brought to you by CFRC Power Plays, and it wasn't necessarily the prettiest victory for the Queens Gaels, but it was a victory nonetheless, as Queens traveled to Toronto to take on their historic rival, the Toronto Varsity Blues, in a game that was broadcast live on CFRC. The Gaels got the scoring started early with a touchdown drive orchestrated by quarterback number 12 Alex Vraken, capped off with this play to number 18 Jack Ashby Jacobs. Vraken has got three receivers on his left-hand side. Logan Walton in single coverage on the right. Play-action pass. He's looking at Mateo Tuioti, but he's going to find!
Touchdown!
Number 18, Jack Ashby Jacobs.
Wow.
The first touchdown of the season going to one of the Gaels' veteran players. The Gaels would jump out to that 7-0 lead, but credit to the Toronto Varsity Blues. They hung tough throughout much of the first half, thanks in no small part to a balanced offensive approach and a little bit of assistance from the officials. A lot of penalty yards issued towards the Gaels, over 140 penalty yards in total for Queens across 12 calls. Quarterback Alex Vraken was typically excellent, going 26 for 36 for 366 yards and that touchdown. The second half would see Queens start to pull away thanks to an excellent pass rush from players such as Stephen Capea, DJ Ryan, and on this play, number 8, Jacob Baldwin.
No, this game could change at any moment.
Oh, Jacob Baldwin! Prez on the play, and I'll take four more years of that, coming in like a bat out of you-know-where, and he's doing you-know-what. What a hit from number 8. It would be Jacob's brother, Jace, that ultimately put the final nail in the coffin of the Varsity Blues with a beautiful third-quarter touchdown run. The Gaels prevail by a scoreline of 28-12, much closer than many would expect, but once again, that's a credit to a young upstart Varsity Blues team that I think made a very strong accounting for themselves. Nevertheless, Queens does win their season opener. They extend their winning streak over the Varsity Blues to 25 consecutive games, stretching now into its 52nd consecutive year. The last Toronto victory, October 1975. Queens has an early bye week, which is probably for the best, as there are a lot of things this team will need to tune up and improve as the season progresses. The next scheduled Gaels game, Saturday, September 12th, it is their home opener against the Waterloo Warriors in what should be an emotionally charged matchup, and it will be integral for the Gaels to get out to a good start in front of their home crowd. If Queens wants to reach the lofty standards they've set for themselves, they will have to clean up these mistakes and put away these teams that they know they should beat.
That's a wrap for your sports report brought to you by CFRC Power Plays. Coming up next, we've got weather and traffic.
This is your City of Kingston traffic report. South Bartlett Street from Victoria to Smith is closed until September 30th, while a contractor undertakes facade restorations at 655 Princess Street.
Red Crescent at Palace Road to Palace Road is closed for a contractor to complete roadway repairs, pedestrian safety and access improvements, and traffic calming features on Red Crescent. Norman Rogers Drive from Sir John A. McDonald Boulevard to Van Order Drive started on June 15th. Norman Rogers Drive is closed to through traffic to facilitate roadway rehabilitation and configuration improvements. This work will improve road condition, accessibility, and safety for all road users, including students, families, and local residents. Reminder that the City of Kingston and Utilities Kingston are in the midst of a reconstruction of Princess Street. This major infrastructure project includes upgrades to underground and above ground utilities, as well as improvements to enhance safety and comfort for pedestrians and cyclists. Berry Street to Queen Street is closed for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street, and Aberdeen Street from Johnson to William is still closed to accommodate construction activity and staging.
This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Monday, August 31st, 24 degrees is your high, feeling closer to 27 with a 55% chance of precipitation. It will be quite humid here in the city of Kingston. Starting off the month of September, Tuesday, September 1st, 23 degrees is your high, feeling closer to 25, mostly cloudy conditions, very humid with a high likelihood of a thunderstorm in the afternoon. Wednesday, September 2nd, humid with periods of rain and a possibility of a thunderstorm. 24 degrees is your high, feeling 2 degrees warmer at 26 with a 65% chance of precipitation. Thursday, September 3rd, 24 degrees is your high, feeling like 25, partly sunny with humid conditions and a couple of light showers in the forecast, especially into the afternoon. Friday, September 4th, 22 degrees is your high with periods of sunshine, feeling a little bit cooler around 21, a beautiful start to the weekend here in the city of Kingston. Saturday, September 5th, 22 degrees with a 55% chance of showers, otherwise we'll see sunny conditions. Sunday, September 6th, 23, feeling like 24 with partly sunny conditions. And then kicking off next week, Labor Day Monday, 22 degrees is your high, feeling closer to 21 with a 60% chance of showers throughout the day. That's a wrap for sports, weather, and traffic. Coming up next, we've got Genevieve Hinch with CFRC's concert and events calendar for the week.
Hello, Kingston, and welcome back to CFRC 101.9 FM. Broadcasting from Kingston, Ontario, I'm CFRC's Community News and Arts Coordinator, Jenny, and this is your weekly events and concerts calendar brought to you by Flying V Productions. Whether you're looking for live music, community events, markets, workshops, or something fun to do around the city, there's lots happening this week, so let's get into it. Starting off Monday, get creative at Craft and Create or check out the Paranormal Circus Nightmare at the Cataraqui Center. Live music includes Gerald McGrath at the Cove Inn and the Marine Doves at Musiki. On Tuesday, check out Learning for Liberation at Cultivate Arts Commons. The Learning for Liberation Book Club or the Crochet and Knit Circle at the KFPL Central Branch. Live music includes Nate Hardy at the Cove Inn. Wednesday brings teens games and grubs at the Rideau Heights branch, board games at Something in the Water, Cafe Franglais at Kingston East Community Center, and the Fort Henry Sunset Ceremony. Live music includes Sean McCullen at the Cove Inn and Neil Carter at the Bank Gastro Bar. On Thursday, head downtown for the Kingston Public Market or test your knowledge at one of the evening's trivia nights. Live music includes Tyson Sullivan, Clear Breeze, and the Miss Emily Band, and Frank Ryan and Friends. Friday brings Feel Good Fridays at the Rideau Heights Community Center, plus a packed night of live music. Catch Jules Halpern, Garrett Mason, Swellsy's Punky Jam, Henry Taylor, and Monique Montgomery, or Good for Tuesday with Stunseed and Lumpfish. Later in the night, there's a Celtic Kitchen Party, Three Pistols, and Ghetto Express. Heading into Saturday, check out the 12th annual Limestone City Car Classic at the Memorial Center Fairgrounds. Saturday summer sightseeing at St. George's Cathedral or repair it at the KFPL Central Branch. Live music includes the Grievish Angels, Daniel Adam, and Ruben DeGroot. Wrapping things up Sunday, spend the morning at the Memorial Center Farmers Market. Later, head over to the Coven for Head Over Heels. Or finish off the week with live band karaoke featuring the Oreos at the Merchant Tap House. That is your weekly events and concerts calendar brought to you for August 31st through September 6th. For more information on any of these events, visit the CFRC website and keep it locked right here on CFRC 101.9 FM. This events calendar is brought to you by Flying V Productions, bringing live theater, comedy, and unforgettable entertainment to audiences across Kingston. I'm Jenny. Thanks for listening and have a great week, Kingston.
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and listen on the go, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, and for our podcast, Smith Engineering at Queen's University. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next. Join CFRC 101.9 FM for our Airwave YGK concert happening September 20th from 1 till 4 p.m. at the Broom Factory. Catch amazing local rockers Squid Pistol, The Winter in Canada, and headliners Lumpfish at this high-energy, all-ages concert. Tickets are $15 in advance or $20 at the door, and you can get your advance tickets now at cfrc.ca. See you there, punks. When the snow...
This is Noel.
I did.
I host The Black Alternative on CFRC 101.9, where we highlight alternative music, diasporic belonging, and all the black sheep making music they're not supposed to. Tune in to listen to me every Wednesday at 3 p.m.
Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present local artist Aidan Siegel's newest single, Modern Skies, a song that reflects on the future in the sense that society is entering unknown territory. The song asks what happens when the things we take for granted begin to change, exploring themes of time, progress, and the possibility that not every path forward leads to something better. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visitkingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Modern Skies on your favorite platforms and enjoy it here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Thank you.
future starts now. Explore future career and educational opportunities at the Thursday, September 24th Career and Further Education Fair. Drop by the main gym of the Athletics and Recreation Center anytime between 10:30 a.m. and 3:30 p.m. Meet in person with employers and representatives from graduate and professional education programs. While you're there, get a free professional headshot at the LinkedIn photo booth. This event is open to all Queen students of all years.
Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present 17, local artist Danny Tessa's debut single. Written 2 years ago after applying to university, the song reflects a period of uncertainty and conflicting emotions about leaving home and starting a new chapter. Through the writing process, Danny came to an important realization: no one has all of life's answers, and that's totally okay. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visitkingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Danny Tessa's 17 on your favorite platforms and enjoy it here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
At 17, I thought I'd know everything. Still, I don't know anything at all. Right now, I can't tell you where I'm headed. Don't know where I will end up in the fall. Half of my heart is telling me to leave. The other half is hoping that I'll stay. Maybe that's because I'm scared to move on. Maybe I'm just afraid of change. Wish I had a few. Everything is slipping through my fingers. Feels like I am running out of time. Staring at the ceiling, talking to my guitar. I can't always find the words, but I still try. Friendships changing faster than the seasons. They never say they wanna leave, but they still go. Everyone around me's growing up and moving out. It feels like they know something that I don't. Always told my younger self the older me would figure it out, but right now nothing's making any sense.
Meter upgrades are coming to Kingston. Utilities Kingston is upgrading to advanced meters known as AMI 2.0 to help modernize services, improve reliability, and support future energy needs. To minimize disruption, electric, water, and gas meters will be upgraded during one visit whenever possible. Installations typically take up to 30 minutes per service and may involve a brief service interruption. Customers will receive advance notice before work begins. Learn more at utilitieskingston.com.
On CFRC 101.9 FM every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 p.m., you'll hear Finding a Voice. My name is Bruce, host of that poetry-focused spoken word program. On it, you'll hear local readings and events, occasionally telephoned interviews across Canada, and always a touch of music. Again, Finding a Voice, here every Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. Check it out. Hope to catch you there.
Good day. You're listening to Free City Radio. This is edition 332. I'm Stefan Christoph. Thanks for being with us today. This is the third edition of a series of interviews with cultural workers in Mexico City, Transbordar, in transit, in transition. And it is affiliated to a zine project that I launched in collaboration with the Suoni Para y Popolo Festival in June 2026. On this edition, I am going to be featuring a conversation with Sorucha, who is a feminist street artist and contemporary organizer, thinking about the intersections of the feminist movement and artistic practice in the contemporary context of Mexico City, but also thinking back to autonomous political movements and the arts in Mexico City and Mexico across generations. I think that Sorucha really offers some important insights to understand the intergenerational ideas that have shaped feminist artistic practices in Mexico. And it was really a pleasure to speak with her for this edition of this series of Voices of Cultural Workers in Mexico City. Here is my conversation with Sorucha. Today, there's a lot of conversation about the intersection of art and social movements. And just from the vantage point of thinking about that intersection in let's say, quote-unquote, Western contexts, Canada, Western Europe, it's often explored as a sort of a phenomenon that is sort of unfolding in a contemporary context. In a lot of contexts around the world, Mexico would be a very clear example, that intersection of social movements and cultural workers is intergenerational. And that's also been part of the understanding of the sort of role of artists and cultural workers for a long time. So Sorucha, you know, we know each other and, you know, I'm familiar with your work. And I would love to talk to you about some of the current projects that you're working on. But maybe just first start, we could start by sort of locating a little bit of that sort of context of thinking about that intergenerational connection of an understanding of movements for social change and cultural workers as having an active relationship, and that this is not a new idea in the Mexican context.
Yeah, I think that it's not a new idea in the Mexican context or in any context. I would say that there is no way a social movement can advance if they don't walk hand in hand with cultural workers, because you can't dissociate one from the other, and also the work has to be done from the core. So when things within the movements are being generated in terms of the ideas, what to move, the strategy planning and everything, that has to be encompassed with how are cultural workers going to enable that information and place or create platforms that can allow for those ideas to flourish, to happen and to connect with others. So in terms of Mexico, of course, we have a long history of cultural workers working directly with social movements. And also, to create, in any arena, to create a, what could I say? The national identity, for instance. One of the strongest political works is muralism, right? And it was very, it was established, alongside the state. So even if it was in many ways a protest to what was going on in that time, it had also helped to ingrain what Mexicans are, not indigenous, not black, not Spanish, but the mixture of everything, and that in itself was a very big push by the cultural sector to establish a national identity, which in turn erased a lot of these other identities that have been present for centuries in this country. And so, it creates a lot of problems around it, let's say. Mm-hmm. But definitely there is a long-standing tradition of art moving and advancing social movements. I don't know if you want me to continue and to move on to feminisms, and I could talk forever.
That's great. I mean, just sort of locating that intersection in terms of nationalisms is important in terms of understanding a contemporary lens of where Mexico's at today, but also more generally that sort of intersection of I mean, you're right, and I really appreciate you underlining that point, that intersection of political questioning and process and the arts isn't always a healthy relationship. So that's important to underline. I mean, in the Canadian context, thinking about, for example, the role of the National Film Board, it has both had a very progressive, radical role in some cases and a very regressive colonial role in other cases. So there's always, but artists play a critical role in actually looking at those complexities in your work in relation to feminist movements and other social struggles in Mexico, I think is an interesting and very important example of that. So yeah, please talk about your work in that context. Thank you.
I would go back to Monica Mayer's work, which is the first social practice artist that started doing feminist artworks in Mexico back in the 70s, 80s, 90s. So she set the ground for other feminists to start doing this kind of work that was directly addressing civil society regarding gender-based violence. And so from there, there has been a type of work like hers, then Lorena Wolfer started also taking on the theme of violence, gender-based violence, from a different perspective, and also putting one's body in terms of as a performance artist, and then moving fully into social practice. And so I have been drawing from there to inform my own activities and what I would love my art to do is to create a space for people to experience a different way of relating to one another. And so I think it's obviously regarding and addressing gender-based violence, but also classism, racism, and different kinds of violence that are in this country very intertwined. But to give us a space not to only talk about violence, but to see other ways that we can relate to one another that is not mediated through that violence and hierarchical structure. And so I also think that it's, well, no, I'm also part of collectives that are thinking about what's going on in Mexico in terms of gender-based violence and in terms of the social movements and what's going on and how we are getting along or not between us and how the far right is advancing. And therefore, that informs how I will create my project. No? So, for instance, the projects that I do go in response to what is happening or being needed at the time. It's very site-specific and time-specific. It's not something that you can translate anywhere else just as it is, right? It always has to transform and adapt to the place that it's talking to and talking with, because it's always about participation. And that is also the beauty of it, because I find that social practice, what it does is encompass what people at that time need to say and speak up about, and therefore you become a platform as an artist for others to talk about a certain issue that is needed to talk about in that time, let's say.
You talked about site-specific responses to the dynamics of the moment, and, you know, the last, let's say, decade in Mexico, there's been a radical propulsion of conversation about gender-based violence. And, you know, it's created this, I don't know exactly the right word to use, but this sort of precarious dynamic where an artist like yourself and others have been invited by state institutions to engage with this question. But then the sort of social movement momentum that has pushed this question, let's say, into a spotlight has really been rooted in the street-based level mobilization, right? That also have included a lot of art and also like thinking about colors and sort of symbols, purple, and the placement of statues. So yeah, do talk about some examples maybe within this sort of dynamic, which, because it also relates to those earlier questions you brought up about in relation to murals in Mexico and artists that maybe are critical of, you know, colonization dynamics in Mexico, but also have been celebrated as part of the quote-unquote national heritage.
Yeah, I think that it's very important to place the question of what we consider art to start with, no? When we're talking about social practice, because then a lot of the things that have been going on in terms of feminisms here, I perceive as social practice, even if it's like not necessarily thought through, but in the end, they end up having different aspects that do have the impact that is generated through social practice. And so there's a lot of symbols, as you say, even going back to the 90s, one of the biggest symbols that is more rooted in Mexico is the pink crosses, which have become a symbol of the struggle against femicides. And that started with the femicides in Ciudad Juárez, where people's families, victims' families would set up a space for those crosses. And then those became installations. And then in different parts of the country, that was socialized because it started spreading to many other states. And so that in itself becomes a language, no? Entonces, so art becomes a language that allows the people to talk about what they're going through, no? As opposed to an artist that talks about something that they want to talk about only and they express, no? In a very individual sense, let's say. And so this tradition of installations has led to many other installations that most of them can be looked at in Mexico City on Reforma, which are anti-monuments. And these anti-monuments are to talk about, let's say, the 43 assassinated students of Ayotzinapa, and to talk about another one of the burning of a daycare where a lot of kids died, and it was due to negligence and two different issues regarding also the involvement of the state. So it is not only about gender-based violence, but is a way that has been acquired by civil society to talk about the problems at stake. And then those are not only a standalone, let's say, anti-monument or piece in the middle of a street, but they also create a performative space where people come, they take over that place, even if it's closing the street, and they have a press conference, or, you know, so there's a lot that goes on around these pieces, and a lot of planning and strategy of where they're going to be placed, and what does that mean. And so the feminist movements have taken from that as well. Actually, in 2019, a feminist collective of mothers of victims of femicide decided to establish an anti-monument in front of the Museum of Fine Arts during the demonstration of the 8th of March. And so all of this, as I was saying, is part of this language that when you can read the city and what the city is telling you, it talks about death. It talks about the state being part of this necropolitical system that it has built, right? So in that sense, I think it's what I try to do is also talk to my peers and see where we're at and then react to these realities, no? I find that right now where we're at is that we need to talk between feminisms. It's very fragmented. As opposed to the far right, that is, even if they have their differences, they do moving along and going, advancing, they do it beautifully. And it's terrible. So what I'm trying to do is also like create projects or spaces where we can talk about these differences and do more mediation, acknowledge that conflict does not necessarily is violence. No, all these things. And then if that is called art or not, I don't care anymore. I think for a long time I tried to be part or be acknowledged by the contemporary art scene. But I think that but more and more I see it as a pointless endeavor because we have very different aims. And for me, it's more important to look at what we need to create and what tools do I have through the arts to enable that and bridge our differences, let's say, than doing something that is related to a museum specifically. Mm-hmm.
But it brings up some really interesting points looking at art institutions also as sites of struggle. And, you know, the last few years have really underlined that in relation to Palestine, for example, and thinking about how there's different levels of institutional complicity or relationship with the military-industrial complex, arms companies, etc. But yeah, I mean, in this contemporary moment, I would ask you maybe about the importance of people looking at these intersections between cities, right? So, you know, part of the goal of this series is to create deeper, at least hopefully a little bit, understanding of people who are interested in this intersection in Montreal and those in Mexico City, very different landscapes, politically, culturally, and socially, economically. But we can also find ways to learn from each other's experiences.
I agree with all of that, but I don't know what the question is.
Well, just like, what do you think about that? Like, the ways that we can learn from each other's relative experience between cities. You know, some of the articles, some of the artists that you mentioned, Monica Mayer, for example, I know spent time in the Bay Area in the 1960s when a lot of, like, the feminist movement in the United States was really active in debate and really, you've mentioned this to me. And obviously that experience was important, but it's also a different landscape than Mexico City, the Bay Area, obviously. But there's ways that sort of different urban experiences and landscapes can learn from each other, I guess. And I'd love to hear your thoughts about that.
Definitely. To set the ground, as you were saying, Monica was part of the Women's Building. And there she learned about the small groups of people, no? small groups of racing consciousness groups, let's say. And then she brought that to Mexico and incorporated that into her practice. And so, yeah, definitely it's a way of exchanging knowledge and creating new spaces and platforms for people to talk about different violence, types of violence. And right now, I think it has been very nourishing. I think that Montreal has a lot to exchange with Mexico City, in terms of multiculturality, no? Because it's not only we can learn not only about the struggles that are taking place within Montreal, but also with so many other countries at the same time, that we can be in touch through the people that are in Montreal, through its multiculturality. So I think that is a huge and very powerful aspect of it. And also I think that it's such a different way of relating to one another in terms of a society, that we can understand what could come to us or vice versa, or how does a society break down into what would happen if Montreal was much bigger with this amount of people. What would happen if I think that the scenarios are so different that it allows us to open to other ways of existing and how to deal with those, with that existence, no? Like in Mexico City, we are around 22 million people. And so the way that we relate to one another is very different to what happens in Montreal. And the way we deal historically and in contemporary society with conflict is very different from what you have. And so that can allow us to strategize together to see how we could solve or how we could advance in terms of social movements, no? Also, like, the tools that we create are always different, or how you use the same tools that I use, but I employ them differently because it's a different context, and that is very rich, no? Whether it's... It also opens the door to many possibilities that we can, like, try out here, let's say, and have that conversation. I think that those conversations are crucial because it's a way to reinvigorate the struggles and the way that we go through them. I think that also just it's very particular to social practice and social movements that it's the type of artwork that comes with it is not quote unquote original. And this is actually a concept from Tania Islas Weinstein. No, so it's not that we are creating something original all the time as it's quote unquote supposed to be in the art world. We always draw from the past. No, so there's like the pink crosses. Okay, we draw from that. What is, and in a group of mine, a collective of mine that we just think, we talk, we think about social movements, feminisms in Mexico City. We have been examining what is still relevant from the past in terms of tools, in terms of strategies, and what is no longer relevant for this time and space. No, and then we retake those. And then you create a new piece, a new whatever it is needed, no? And so it's never starting from scratch. It's always has in itself a I don't know if you say it, like genealogy. And so that's also a particular aspect of this kind of work that I think is very beautiful. But also it's more practical, because then you're not trying to invent the wheel. It is important that people actually know the history, because a lot of the youngsters do try to invent the wheel, and then that's where we have a lot of issues. But in itself, I think it makes it stronger, and that's why it prevails. No? And that's when things become a symbol. And you don't have to work that much to like ingrain a kind of thought that you wanna talk about, or you wanna put in the public sphere, no, and spotlight.
Yeah, and through that common understanding of symbols, they can be debated and remixed and replayed or reimagined or just dropped, depending on a particular context of how artistic symbolism shows up in social movements. And that ongoing conversation is very important, and that expands to many different spheres of creative expression as a tool of advancing social struggles. So thanks so much for this conversation today. I really appreciate it.
Me too. Thank you.
That was a conversation with Mexican artist and feminist activist Surucha, which is part of a series that I have worked on linked to a zine called Transbordar, Voices of Cultural Workers in Mexico City, that launched in June 2026 in collaboration with the Suoni para el Popolo Festival. Free City Radio broadcasts weekly on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal on Wednesdays at 11 a.m., on CJLO 1690 a.m. also in Montreal on Thursdays at 8 a.m., on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on Tuesdays at 8 a.m. and Fridays at 1:30 p.m., on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston on Wednesdays at 11:30 a.m., on CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria on Saturdays at 7 a.m., on Met Radio 1280 a.m. in Toronto on Fridays at 5:30 a.m. on CKCU 93.1 FM in Ottawa on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. on CGSF 90.1 FM in Vancouver on Tuesdays at 4 p.m. and on CHMA 106.9 FM in Sackville, New Brunswick on Tuesdays at 10 a.m. You can find our archives at soundcloud.com/freecityradio. We're also a podcast. Look us up. Just search Free City Radio. I'm Stefan Christoph. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll be with you next week.